familiar. See, that's where Dobkin and I are different. It takes me a long time to adjust to a new place, but Dobkin fits right in wherever he happens to be. And Aunt Celia never stays in one place very long. With a whole wonderful world out there, we have no excuse ever to be bored, is what she's always telling us. Which is why we're always packing up the very second that school lets out and moving off somewhere else. She's got it down to a system, really. She calls a family conference, and then she takes out a map of the United States, and then one of us gets to close our eyes and point our finger anywhere on the map while she moves it around to keep us from cheating. It was Aunt Celia's turn when we ended up in Florida with a cottage right on the beach. The time before that, Dobkin picked North Carolina, and we rented a real log cabin up in the mountains. So when my finger landed on Missouri this time, I knew Dobkin was disappointed, because lately he's been obsessing about Texas and owning a cattle ranch. "Why Missouri?" he'd asked me, narrowing his eyes like I'd done it on purpose just to ruin his life. "I don't know," I told him. "My finger just wanted to go there." "Yeah, right," Dobkin grumbled. I couldn't really blame him for being grumpy. It couldn't have happened at a worse time. Weeks of rain in Florida had flooded the town, the school, and our house, so Aunt Celia had decided to make the move a little early and let us finish out the school year somewhere else. "The Midwest is lovely," Aunt Celia had tried to cheer Dobkin up. "A lovely place to be. We'll find one of those wonderful small towns where everyone knows everyone else and life is simple and honest and sweet." Aunt Celia is one of those positive-thinking kinds of people. She's scatterbrained and creative and totally unpredictable, which makes life an exciting place to be as long as you're with her. I also think she must be very rich, since she never seems to sell any of her sculpture but can still afford to take us so many places. She's never talked about money, and I've never asked. She's taken care of us ever since our parents died in a car crash 2 years ago, and she's the only mother I've got. So I think she's pretty great in spite of all her weirdness. But now, here I was, glancing longingly over my shoulder, watching the van grow smaller and smaller as it went down the street and left me behind. And then I swallowed the lump in my throat and turned back to the ugly building. "Come on," I muttered to myself, squaring my shoulders and taking one step forward. It always makes me feel better when I talk out loud. It's not like this is the first time you've ever had to do this. Yet how was I to know, standing there on the sidewalk of Edison High School, that this time was going to be different? "Come on," I said to myself again. "Get going." And I was so determined to be brave that I swung my shoulder purse out to my side and then behind me in a big wide arc without even looking first. I felt the impact only a second before I heard the gasp. Spinning around, I was horrified to see a guy right behind me, doubled over and holding his stomach. His books were scattered across the sidewalk, and his black hair hung down all around his face so that I couldn't actually see what he looked like. I was so shocked, all I could do was stand there and stare. After what seemed like forever, he finally straightened up and stared back at me, and when I saw the corners of his mouth twitch, I wasn't sure if he was getting ready to yell or just trying not to laugh. "I hope you have that thing registered," he said softly. He was wearing an overcoat way too big for him, a long flowing black thing buttoned right down over his black high tops. He was also wearing a black baseball cap, turned around backward. "What?" I stammered. "Lethal weapon." He kept a straight face. "What do you have inside that thing? Rocks?" "I'm so sorry." Dropping my purse on the sidewalk, I went toward him, but he jumped back out of reach. "Whoa," he shook his head. "I can't take any more pain today. Thanks very much."
"I said I was sorry," I babbled. "I didn't hear you coming."
"I'm sneaky." He threw me a curious glance, as though he wanted to know about me but was too polite to ask, and then he shifted his attention to his books spread out all over the sidewalk. With one quick movement, he squatted down and started gathering up his things. "Here, let me help," I offered, but he held out one hand to ward me off. "No, that's okay. Stay where you are." Now that he wasn't watching me, I could see how really cute he was, how soft his hair looked as he shook it back from his wide, dark eyes. He was slender and had sort of delicate features, small nose, narrow chin, and cheekbones and eyelashes I would have died for, and his body